Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, our program as we examine the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and look closely at important people, important places, events, and issues associated with that history. I'm Brent Topp, the chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. I'm your host, and with me again today is Max Parkin, a longtime institute teacher at the University of Utah, and Alex Baugh, professor of church history at BYU. We've been talking about not only the general history of Missouri, but in our last episode, we talked about Zion's Camp and how they were organized and sent on their way to help rescue the saints that had been expelled from Jackson County. We want to pick up today with what goes on as they arrive in Jackson County and what becomes of Zion's Camp. So, Dr. Baugh, why don't you start off a little bit about getting him from Kirtland to Jackson County, as Dr. Parkin pointed out to us, of how the inhabitants of Missouri were preparing themselves for the arrival of Zion's Camp. Let's talk a little bit about the events preceding that.
Okay, well, we get the camp underway, and Joseph was hoping to go somewhat incognito. After all, you can imagine these companies coming through these towns and settlements. National Daily Intelligencer in Washington, D.C., and also Niles Weekly Register in Baltimore published small articles about the Mormons heading to Missouri. And, of course,
So they knew the incognito didn't work then.
It didn't quite. They tried to, of course, look and appear as if they were just kind of Western travelers. And, in fact, they say that during the trip, Joseph Smith said, "Don't call me Joseph Smith, call me Squire Cook." Mm-hmm. So they're trying to be kind of a little bit under the radar. They made their way from Kirtland down to near Columbus, Ohio, and from that point they pick up on the National Road. Now, this is not a major road like ours today, but it was kind of the main east-west thoroughfare from Virginia over to Vandalia, Illinois. Vandalia was the original capital of Illinois. So while they're on that road, it's a fairly well-traveled road. But they're going along a seasoned route, if you will, and of course picking up recruits as they go along. But they had to string out at times and try to, as they pass through communities, not alarm people that they were coming through. We unfortunately have a few members of Zion's Camp who were not the best in terms of, we have some rabble rousers. One of them is Sylvester Smith. We have some complainers on the trip, and this causes Joseph Smith some real heartache. But for the most part, the camp is moving along well and having some wonderful experiences.
They do indeed, and eventually, of course, anticipate their arrival in Clay County so they can begin to fight. Some of them wanted to fight, and Joseph had to caution them, and they, of course, will later have some difficulty to adjust when they actually do not engage in battle. These people are on a peace journey. In fact, they carry a flag with them that's titled Peace, and they want to resolve these differences in Missouri amicably and wholesomely and with the support of the law and hopefully with the support of the Western Missouri citizens. But that's not the way it'll turn out.
Huh. Should also mention that this is a great learning experience for these good men. There's one incident they talk about that they came to I think it was in Indiana. They came to a creek and set up camp one night, and sure enough, they were right in a bed of rattlesnakes. And of course, the first inclination of most of these company members is just kind of let's chop these snakes up and get rid of them so we can camp in peace here and safety. And Joseph Smith rebukes them and says, move those snakes just across the river. So they put them on sticks and moved them across the river. And Joseph said, how will the serpent ever lose its venom when man himself possesses the same disposition? So Joseph's teaching them as they go along. Quite interestingly, I think it was Orson Hyde said, a day or two later, they're walking along, and Joseph Smith takes a rifle and shoots a squirrel out of a tree, and the squirrel drops down, and they're going, no, hold it. We just had this incident with the rattlesnakes. What's going on here? Now, this is an innocent little creature, and Orson goes, you know what? He picks it up and says, let's prepare this that nothing may be lost. And Joseph said the point was well taken. They learned a lesson. We can kill if we can use the means for the animal and so on and so forth. But anyway, Joseph instructs them as they go along. I think they're enjoying the journey. It's certainly hard. The camp, day-to-day camp operations, the travel, the blisters, it's pretty tough.
Let's talk a little bit about some of those difficulties. You know, you mentioned that there were some complainers or dissidents, if you will, and let's talk about maybe what was going on that would cause some to grumble, because it was not necessarily staying in five-star hotels along the way. Let's talk about some of the sickness or challenges that they faced as they journeyed those 900 miles.
Certainly there was food. The food was not the best. The conditions every day of extensive travel, it's starting to warm up, it's hot, it's summer, bad drinking water, sickness, people are not feeling well. This is not your typical overnight Boy Scout camp out. Yeah. And this is some tough times. And we do have this small group or a few of the members that do seem to possess a kind of an unruly and fractious spirit. Joseph does prophesy on July 4th, I believe it was, that because of some of these activities of the camp, that they would be, Lord would strike them with a scourge. Wasn't specific, but it appears that there was to be some tempering on this camp as well, in spite of the difficulties and hardship.
Well, brethren, we talked about some of the hardships, the adventures, not only in the recruiting of this Zion's camp. We've also talked about some of their challenges they faced in getting to Missouri. Well, now that we've got them to Missouri, let's talk a little bit about what happens when the camps come together and are ready to start their final portion or final stage of this endeavor.
That begins the first week of June. They're all assembled at the Allred Settlement in Monroe County. And Joseph, of course, is intent now on making that final push. But he wants to let the governor know that they're there and that they're ready to unite with the state militia. So Parley P. Pratt and Orson Hyde are sent as the two representatives to go down to Jefferson City. And there these two men met with Governor Dunklin and informed the governor that we're here and we need to proceed. It's at that point in time that Governor Dunklin has thought this through, I think, a little bit more. And he encourages the saints to continue to try to seek redress through the courts. But he basically suggests that there probably will not be any military intervention. And I think he's trying to think of, you know, cooler heads should prevail in this. We don't want to have any type of bloodshed or armed conflict. I think things have just gotten to the point where he recognizes if there is a military intervention, there could be some real problems there.
Well, especially in light of the fact that what Max mentioned earlier is that the Missourians have kind of been whipped up into a fervor and they're already anticipating something far bigger than what it was. And so there it has the potential of being a real powder keg there. So how do we get this resolved then? What happens after that point, Dr. Parkin?
Well, indeed, the governor is cautious. He doesn't want a civil war in western Missouri, as any wise governor would try to avoid. I have a document here, a letter written by a young man from Lexington. Lexington is the county seat of Lafayette County, just east of Jackson County. And he is determined to participate with the mobs. We call them mobs, but they call them defenders mm-hmm. of their homes. And he indicates in a letter to his father in Kentucky that by this time, this is the time when the Mormons have arrived in Clay County, but to indicate the fervor that they are feeling as they await for the Mormon action. He says that Jackson County has raised 900 men and 400 from Lafayette County, and 300 more would be ready to march immediately. Then he adds this, "Father, next Monday is supposed to be the day that they will cross the river," meaning the Missouri River, "from Clay County back to Jackson County, to take Jackson County. The whole country is in an uproar. Volunteers are prepared to go to the scene of action. Should they cross the river, there would be a battle and probably much bloodshed. We will give no quarter. Others will join us. I am going to march tomorrow, Father, at 8 o'clock. So we get kind of the feeling of this sort of thing. He says, "Father, we have neither law nor God on our hand, only the right of self-preservation. Give us the tone of the people there in the West waiting for the Mormon arrival," because they thought this Mormon arrival was a military attack upon them and was going to do damage.
Yeah, that's very interesting hearing it from the other side of the equation. We don't always think of the sentiment of those that also felt like they were preserving their lands as well. Well, let's talk about what happens then to Zion's camp. We brought it to that point, and nothing happens as far as warfare. Why not?
They arrive in Clay County. That is, Zion's camp arrives in Clay County and camps between two branches of the Fishing River on the eastern part of the county the first night. There is a marvelous, magnificent storm that strikes Zion's camp, and they flurry into whatever cover they can find, which is very, very little. Lightning, hail, wind, it's a wretched storm, but this storm is powerful enough to disband the mobs that are about to attack them that late afternoon on their first day's arrival in Clay County. Consequently, there is no battle. The next day, they find that the Fishing River, going as they would proceed west on the road, the Fishing River was flooded. Kimball says 40 feet high. They couldn't continue on west. They had to go north to avoid the floodwaters, where they camp at a member of the church's farm there, Brother Cooper, and they remain there for the next few days. And this gives them a chance then to meet with the mob leaders on Saturday the 21st of June, and they discuss the problem. They know there's going to be war if they march right over to Jackson County immediately, and so both the Prophet Joseph and the local Missouri leaders engage in an accord. They sign the accord. There will not be an attempt to go to Jackson County at this time. Let's see if we can solve this in peace rather than in war. Joseph knew there would be a tragedy, and so he consents, as the Lord directs him, to disband Zion's camp.
You're listening to the Mormon Channel and our program Past Impressions as we examine the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Today, Dr. Max Parkin and Dr. Alex Baugh join me as we are talking about Zion's camp. And in our last segment, we talked about the negotiations between the Missourians and the Saints on the banks of the Fishing River. We're trying to avoid bloodshed. We're trying to avoid a civil war in Jackson County. And so we've come with a somewhat of a civil agreement. Well, what's the next step in the settling of the issue or the disbanding of Zion's camp?
Well, when Joseph Smith received word, the governor encouraged them to, again, try to settle this peacefully and not by armed conflict. Joseph knew they could not intercede by themselves. Mm-hmm. And so at this point in time, he's got to carry on and go all the way to western Missouri. He's got to finish out the journey. He wants to meet with the Missouri church leaders there who are in Clay County and the saints there. So I think for those couple of weeks, Joseph's really wondering, I need some revelatory direction on this. Where are we going to go? I mean, we've come all this way. And that does come, I believe, again, Max, the negotiations were on the 21st, and then on the 22nd.
That's correct.
He receives the Revelation section 105, which, again, is a very powerful revelation. We call it the Fishing River Revelation, received right there on John Cooper's farm. But it gave Joseph Smith and the church some justification for the journey and what the Lord's expectations were.
How did the men of Zion's camp react to the revelation, or how did they react that they've come 900 miles and now the Lord is saying to Joseph Smith, okay, that's good enough?
Well, the reaction was variable, of course. That depends upon the nature and the motivation and the zeal of the individual participant. And some of the men did not like the disbanding or the discontinuing of Zion's camp and its objective. They wanted to get to Jackson County. Wilford Woodruff hoped to get to Jackson County to do something there. But he, along with others, acquiesced and knew that this was the best thing to do, was to resolve it perhaps through negotiation, if they could resolve it. But some of the men were angry. Mm-hmm. They were upset. And Joseph had to quiet them. And at this time is when Joseph cautioned them that a curse would be imposed upon them because of their unruly behavior. Many of them were grateful that they would not have to go to war.
Okay.
The revelation stated that part of the problem, of course, was with the saints themselves. I think we could say Zion's camp, some of the members were just not in compliance with the Lord's expectations. There was some blame or responsibility placed upon those who refused to assist. Section 105 talks about those who are in the east. The eastern branches did not come through like they should have. So there's a lot of complicity here. The Missourians certainly have their influence, but the Latter-day Saints themselves were not quite unified enough for the Lord to say, okay, we're going to make this happen. So, but he does say and gives them great promise concerning the fact that even though this was not ultimately fulfilled according to our original expectations, the Lord had a great blessing, a promise to them if they would return to Ohio. And there he said, I will prepare my elders for an endowment of power to be bestowed upon them. It's not all lost. And he said, I brought you thus far for a trial of your faith. It proved to be a very leadership kind of training ground and preparatory kind of an experience for these early brethren.
So was Zion's camp a success or a failure? I guess the answer is depends on what you were looking at and what was looking for. So when the Lord says, I brought you this for a trial of your faith, what does he mean by that? What do you think the revelation is telling us about the purpose of Zion's camp? Because the obvious stated purpose
was not ultimately achieved.
Yeah. So how do you as historians view this period of time? A success? A failure? What was the role of Zion's camp?
Well, I think we have to acknowledge that the military objective of Zion's camp was a failure. It did not return the saints to Jackson County. That was the big hope. That was the expectation of everybody that participated. But there were residual benefits. And like many negative things in life, it's a matter of how we react to those disappointments and that discouragement. And many good things can come from misfortunes if we approach it correctly and have the right heart and the right attitude. And there were many men on this journey that had those kinds of spirits and hearts within their own bosom. For example, 9 or 10 of the men that later became apostles were in this camp. A couple of others, of course, resided in Missouri, so they were not. That is, a couple of other future apostles resided in Missouri and didn't participate in it. But that was a great training for them. And all of those who later became 70s, the first quorum of 70s, were here in Zion's camp. So there's a lot of learning there, a lot of exposure to the prophet Joseph Smith. Great faith was built as great faith was tested during this journey.
What did the men that were associated with Zion's camp, how did they spin this experience after they get home? What do the records tell us as to what purpose had been served with Zion's camp as you've read those documents?
Well, I would have to say in terms of both Brigham again and Wilford, who left some wonderful statements on this, Brigham said, during this period of time, I watched Joseph like a hawk. Mm-hmm. And he said, this was the beginning of my learning how to lead Israel.
And Wilford Woodruff, much the same way. They really were taught some marvelous things from Joseph Smith and saw this kind of, I think, as that leadership training ground that Max talked about in terms of how they would respond in terms of their own leadership callings. But, yeah, 9 of the 12 get called out of Zion's camp. The only David Patton was in Missouri, as was Marsh. So they weren't part of Zion's camp. And then John Boynton was stuck in Maine. He was the other future apostle. Those are the only three that weren't part of the Zion's camp experience. So they really benefited in their minds. It was worth every step of the way. It was a great experience for them to participate in.
I just would ask both of you, great scholars of Missouri church history, what would you see as the legacy of Zion's camp? What came as a result of Zion's camp that is so influential and is so future-shaping?
Well, there's a number of residual things that come from this most romantic and almost tragic adventure. One of them is part of the tragedy of it. The Lord counseled these participants to behave. And sometimes when they didn't behave, the prophet Joseph became upset with them, and the Lord did impose a curse upon them. Consequently, after they left the Fishing River campsite, they arrived just east of Liberty, about 2 miles east on the banks of the Brush Creek. And there they began to be afflicted by cholera. Cholera was a terrible disease that struck many of the American cities at this time. It was not unique to Zion's camp. And within a few days, 13 of Zion's camp will die. About 60 of them will suffer from cholera, and 13 of them will die. Two of the local saints will get cholera as well and die there with the Zion's camp nearby. They will be buried along Rush Creek and elsewhere, and that's one of the legacies, a tragic legacy. And I might just mention that in 1956, the farmer that owned the land where those burials took place went out to his feeder lot one day and found the bones of some of them. Eventually, long story, but eventually those bones were identified as three participants of Zion's camp and were later taken to Mound Grove Cemetery in Independence and buried where there's a monument today to them.
Interesting.
The final disbanding of Zion's camp, all the saints assembled the camp, and many Latter-day Saints living in Clay County assembled at the home, the property of Michael Arthur. And while there, Joseph recognized, okay, we obviously did not redeem Zion, but we're still here. And so Joseph organized the Missouri High Council and established and put into place that organization that he had done in Kirtland prior to leaving Kirtland in February, Section 102. So he establishes the Missouri presidency with David Whitmer, John Whitmer, and W.W. Phelps as that presidency and a high council. So we're still there, and we organize a Missouri presidency as well.
There's an interesting part of the story that I think a lot of people don't even know, and that was that Zion's camp was not really the whole end of Zion's camp. Dr. Parkin, why don't you tell us about what Joseph's expectations for maybe an additional Zion's camp was. It's news to me.
Indeed, there was planning for a second Zion's camp. And the roots of that begin in Section 105, where the Lord announced that this camp will be disbanded, but using particular subtle terms, I might just mention, there'll be another Zion's camp where they'll come to Missouri with power and be able to perhaps succeed that time. That's a long story, but very, very briefly, the idea was that the saints were instructed to get throughout the East, were instructed to gather to Clay County and build up a great force in Clay County. But in addition to that, in Kirtland and elsewhere in the church, they were to establish a second military body to come west. And the Lord gave, at least the prophet Joseph gave, a deadline for that, which would be the fall, September of 1836. So they had 2 years to prepare for that Zion's camp. David Whitmer was appointed to be the leader, the general of it, to recruit and to lead others to get it organized and eventually be the general that would lead them west when it was organized. There were instructions in the various meetings of the church concerning organizing this, a body of 1,000, this time 1,000 men to go west with guns and necessary equipment to accomplish the objective, and to arrive in Clay County, escort the saints back without the governor's help if necessary, live or die. This was our objective. However, eventually after the dedication of the Kirtland Temple and the endowment, the prophet Joseph, though he prayed heavily for directions from the Lord for this second Zion's camp and information about it, the revelation did not come to the prophet Joseph, and he and his counselors, after deliberate and considerable meditation, it was not followed through and it was ended.
Interesting. Well, this has been a very, very fascinating and enjoyable discussion as we talk about Zion's Camp. I think for me personally, one of the great messages that we get from the revelations and the story of Zion's Camp is that the Lord is in charge, and that while things don't always work out in our lives or institutionally or individually exactly the way we thought they were, the Lord is in charge and He's going to bring about His purposes. And to me, one of the great messages of Zion's Camp is how revelation often comes. I don't know about for you, brethren, but for me, oftentimes I find out what the Lord had in mind when He inspired me to do something after the fact, not before the fact. And I can look back and say, oh, that's what that meant. And I think Zion's Camp is one of those, is that it wasn't quite the way everybody thought it was going to be, but the Lord's hand was in it, and the men were prepared, the kingdom went forth, and the influence of Zion's Camp and the messages and lessons learned from Zion's Camp didn't end on the banks of the Fishing River. It didn't end in Caldwell County or Clay County or Jackson County or in Kirtland. It continues to bless and shape the lives of individual members of the church as we listen to the Lord and obey His counsel. Thank you so much, Max and Alex, for being here. We're going to continue in some future episodes on the Mormon Channel on past impressions, talking about what happens to the saints in Missouri now that they haven't been able to redeem Jackson County in the way that they'd originally intended. And so we look forward to having you again as guests in future programs.
Thank you.